You're listening to the Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network, brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Interstate Batteries has been a proud supporter of the Sportsman's Nation since day one. So if you're looking for any type of batteries, whether it's for your truck, your car, your trail cameras, your rangefinder, stop into a local Interstate Batteries retail location. There are thousands upon thousands of them all over the United States. Talk with a battery specialist and get the batteries that you need to go on with your life. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
All right, welcome back to the Backcountry Rookies podcast. So today I've got another stories from the season. And as you know, these stories from the season are, they're just an opportunity for me to have people on and friends of mine or previous guests that have been on the show. And I like to bring them on and give them the opportunity and the platform to tell the story of their hunt, story from the season. And today I've got Jeff Moran on from Built for the Hunt. And he spent about 3 weeks in Wyoming, so he's got some tales to tell. So a quick word from the sponsors, and then we'll jump right into the show with Jeff, and we'll introduce him and tell the story.
The Backcountry Rookies podcast is proudly brought to you by Elk 101's University of Elk Hunting. The University of Elk Hunting is the most comprehensive elk hunting education platform that you can get. From learning and knowing how to call elk to packing an elk out of the woods, University of Elk Hunting covers every step of the elk hunting process. Use the promo code ROOKIES and save $20 on your membership today. Go Hunt Insider. Go Hunt is always working hard to add value for the insiders. On top of draw odds, unit statistics and analysis, insider points in the Go Hunt gear shop, and a ton of more features, now Go Hunt is adding real 3D maps to Insider at no additional cost. Adding these maps has solved my problems of having three screens up on my computer all the time, running Insider, Google Earth, and a mapping software. Now I got them all in one place, collected right there in Go Hunt Insider. Use the code ROOKIES when you purchase Go Hunt Insider and get $50 in gear shop credit to use in the Go Hunt gear shop. Vortex Optics. Vortex designs, engineers, and produces a complete line of premium sport optics and accessories. And did you know that Vortex is now in the apparel game? So check them out, Vortex Apparel. Vortex is dedicating to providing top quality customer service and products to the users and backs it all up with their lifetime VIP warranty. Use the code ROOKIES and save 20% off of apparel on the Vortex website. Now let's get to the show.
Hey Jeff, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me on, man. I appreciate it.
Absolutely.
I think we just did this actually, but that's okay.
Yeah, right. So we had him on. Jeff was on, I don't know, it was a few months ago, and he came on to talk about entering full draw film tour and some of these film tours and how to record and just kind of put together the films for those shows. And it was a lot of fun to talk about that, because I think a lot of people want to try to do that in today's world. You see everybody's got a camera and everybody's video and stuff, but today we're going to talk about a different topic. So today we're going to talk about the story from your season, and it sounds like you had a whopper, man.
that's an understatement. Yeah, I mean, I'm an Idaho guy. I've actually never hunted elk outside of the state of Idaho. So a couple years ago, a buddy had approached me and told me of some, I guess, a general tag in Wyoming, which it takes a couple years to draw it if you're a non-resident. And he'd shown me a couple bulls in the area, and I'd always kind of like dreamed of going into Wyoming and everything and making a hunt like that happen. And so it finally like came to this year. I paid the extra special fee to kind of hurry up because I'm impatient, and I made sure to draw it this year. And yeah, I got in there, and there was a couple things that kind of changed the layout and the aspect of the entire hunt. One, I was going in after a couple very specific goals. So I did go in July, and I hiked back in there to see exactly like how far the hike was going to be, and if I wanted to do it, or if I wanted to do it on horseback. And I wanted to scout. It was only for probably 24 hours, maybe a little bit more. And I saw a couple really big bulls, and I knew of some other ones that were in there. So this hunt, actually was kind of go big or go home. I say that ahead of time. It changes throughout the time of the hunt because, I mean, mentally you get tired, you get exhausted and everything else. But yeah, I was in there for about 3 weeks. And so we'll try and cut this short a little bit. One of the other things that changed, I was actually trying to pull off two hunts in September. I was going to try and pull off the Wyoming hunt, and I was going to try and pull off my regular Idaho hunt, which is in the brutal terrain over there in the western portion of the state. And after about a week in Wyoming, I was thinking, okay, I got to put something down kind of fast. And then I randomly got service on the side of the mountain, and I started scrolling through Instagram. And since that's what you do when you're in the backcountry. And and I saw a friend of mine post fires, and come to find out the unit that I would normally go into was basically lit up and closed.
So, in Idaho?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, cause I was like crushed by smoke in there in Wyoming. Like some days you couldn't even see more than like a mile, and we didn't know what was going on. And come to find out my entire unit was basically closed. So my hunt in Idaho couldn't happen. So at that point I had to decide, you know what? I have enough food for a little while. So I'm just going to stick it out here, and we're going to hunt till, or I'm going to hunt till I'm ready to go home or something happens. And that's kind of what happened. Now I am writing a couple articles about it, and I don't know where they're going to be published yet. One of them is going to be just like the more in-depth meaning of the hunt. So you guys can look out for that when it actually comes out, and it'll probably end up in a magazine. And then the other one is, this was a DIY, like, general public land hunt on horseback. So I took horses in by myself. I had never done that before. Yeah. So the, one of the things that was kind of different for the hunt for myself and, well, just in general was like you always hear all the time, people want to do like they either want to come out west to hunt for the first time, or a lot of people tell you, well, like a horseback hunt for elk or something in the backcountry is their dream hunt. I remember growing up, that was my dad's thing. He was always like, I would love to do an elk hunt on horseback. And it kind of became like a dream of mine too, but I didn't want to do it with guides or outfitters. And so, you know, I haven't been on a horse in 15 years, but I did it anyways. And so I'm writing an article about that, and it was an adventure, and we're going to get into some of that adventure during this. But I guess that's kind of where it all started. Was once September rolled around, I knew I was going to be able to go on the hunt. That was kind of a worry for a little bit. I had a guy back out that was going to give me horses in a trailer, and I had to find some other stuff. And I found a ranch to basically rent horses. And so not only am I getting on a horse after 15 years, which I had gotten on a couple times this year, but I went with rented draft horses. And if anybody knows anything about horses, like your average horse that you see is probably a quarter horse, something smaller. Draft horses are huge. they're yeah, not they small are. Creatures. They're usually a couple feet taller than your average quarter horse, and they're a lot heavier. I think both of these boys that I took out were like 17 and 1800 pounds.
Jeez.
They're monsters. And I did that mainly because I didn't want to tow in a bunch of mules, and I knew I was going way back there, and I wanted something that could handle 400 or 500 pounds if we had to take him out, or if I had to take him out. So it was me and two draft horses. And now I say that as it was a solo hunt. It was always planned to be a solo hunt, but I did have somebody come in for and hang out with me for a week. But then I was in there for an additional like 10, 12 days after that. It got kind of long. So I guess we'll kind of go right from the start. When I got in there, I pulled the horses out, and they were kind of skittish after a couple hour drive. And anybody knows horses, like if they're kind of timid or skittish at one point in time, they'll probably last that way for the rest of the day. And I had right off the bat, I had an instance where one of the horses kind of, unless you tied him like directly to a tree where his face was like touching the tree, he was going to step over his lead somehow. And that's what he did. And he got tangled up, and he actually went down, which was a whole nightmare for me. You're talking about somebody who, like, I've dealt with the horses in the past and everything, but yeah, this was, that was a kicker right off the bat. And then just like, he went down, my pack that was strapped to him flew off, food everywhere, all over the ground. I was like, oh my God, this is going great. This is going to be an awesome hunt. And, we kind of got under control there at one point in time, but I had some issues with the saddle. And then we jumped a moose, like a calf moose. And those two horses did not know what in the world was running right in front of them. And then they got all sorts of sketched out. I had to duck them into the trees, because if you've been around a moose before, you jump a calf, like run before mama gets there. Mm-hmm. And it was that first day on the mountain. Oh my. I would never want to live that again, and I hope nobody ever else has to relive something like that.
Thinking about turning around and going home at that point already.
I was thinking about taking the horses back, let's put it that way. Yeah. I wasn't quitting. I've been waiting on this hunt for way too long, but I was just like, man, well, I got to go 7 miles with him, and I'm like 2 miles in at this point, or 8 miles with him. And yeah, it was good time. So I had some issues with one of the saddles, and I turned them around after about about 3.5 miles. We were almost halfway in, and I turned them around, and it was warm that very first day. And we came back out. I jumped deer, I jumped elk, and I jumped that moose, like all in the first little go. I was like, well, at least there's animals moving around. But it was really a warm day. And I stayed out that first night. I didn't go in and hunt or anything. And then I woke up in the middle of the night to 2 inches of snow. It went from 80 degrees to 25 degrees and 2 inches of snow in the course of a couple hours. I was like, well, this is September, so this is kind of how it usually goes for me. and so we're not even at 24 hours at this point. I'm just like, man, I got a long ways to go. And, eventually the next day the boys settled down a little bit. I figured the saddle situation out. The one horse is really broad and wide. His name's Sherman, black one that you guys probably see pictures from. And he kind of waddles, and that kind of throws that saddle off. So you have to stop him and tighten him down every couple of miles. And so once I got the hang of it and kind of figured out what he was doing, and you can't be afraid of horses, man. There's so many people that the reason that they don't go on these hunts is they're like scared to death of a horse, and you just got to kind of deal with it and know that they're going to fight you and they're going to be a pain in the butt the entire time. But as long as your kind of expectations are that's the way it's going to go, it can be a lot of fun. And once I got back there and got started, everything changed. Like it was an event to just get to camp. It was a 2-day event actually. But once I got to camp and I got settled down, I got situated, the horses were fantastic. And then the elk were they were different this year. And I knew that they were going to be different because that moon was right in the middle of the month. Anybody who is a September archery hunter, most guys will probably tell you that moon, they get excited for that new moon in the middle of the month. But usually I found that month when it happens to be a pain in the butt because the cows don't kick it till late. And that's exactly what happened. Like I went maybe the first day I heard some bugles, like a couple, and then the next day I didn't hear anything. And I'm way back there, and you're getting kind of frustrated at that point. And even though you're only 2 days in, it's already like a mental grind. And then finally I had this 5-point running a 6-point across the canyon, and they were going crazy all morning, and that put me at ease. But we're in day three, and I hadn't even I'd seen a couple elk, but that was about it. It was tough going. And, which is not what I expected. Cause when I was in there in July, or I saw 200 head in like 3 hours. Huh. So yeah. So they had moved, they kind of moved around quite a bit as soon as like the hunting season started, which was crazy because I was so far back there. Like at one point I was almost 15 miles back from the trailhead, and I still wasn't seeing anything. They were moving around. They had moved back into this like real deep timber away from easy access, even though there was nobody back there, they still just weren't, they weren't there. And I was hearing wolves at night, and I was wondering if the wolves had come in and moved things around. Like, there wasn't a day that went by that I didn't cut wolf tracks. Which was, I see that in Idaho in some places, but not, I didn't expect it out there at first. I knew that the wolves were there, but I could hear them most nights, and we were cutting tracks every day.
Did you ever see any or just the tracks?
No, just the tracks, and I could hear them. I mean, there was a couple times they were pretty close. The one night, I think the second day after she got there, we were walking back in the dark, and they had to have been like maybe 150 yards from camp. And I felt bad for the horses because we weren't there. I'm just like, man, those horses are good. They're probably losing their minds at the moment. And because horses, they just get skittish over everything. But it it turned out all right. The after a couple of days, we were having trouble locating elk, which was surprising to me. Usually I can find them in a day or two, and then I just kind of go with it. And then we circled back around into this spot that was a little bit closer. It was like 7 or like 8 miles back from the trailhead, and the bulls were going crazy, and they all had cows. And it was surprising. It was like literally one ridge over, and it was a whole completely different world. I saw
what time of the month was that?
Ooh, that was like the 12th of September. So I went in on the, 7th, and the 6th or 7th, something like that. Actually, it was Monday, Memorial Day. Is that what it is? Labor Day, Memorial Day,
Labor Day, something like that. Yeah.
Labor Day. Okay. I get them mixed up. so yeah, I went in on Labor Day. That was the first day that I was there. And then, yeah, it was like 5 days later or something that I finally cut some bulls. That there was one bull that was screaming and yelling out in front of us. He was probably like 320, and he was pushing 5 or 6 cows around. And, but he wasn't what I was after. I was actually after the couple bulls that I was after were somewhere between like 360 and 380.
Wow.
And which is, they're big. I knew what they looked like. I knew where they were going to be. And it was just a matter of tracking them down. And I had trouble finding them. And the timber was, all the elk were staying in this really heavy timber, which was different for me because I usually, where I go, like I can sit in glass and spot them. But here I knew that I was going to end up having to dive into the timber. I was going to have to come off of the ridge line and drop down like 1,000 feet to get onto them. And that was going to be, it's going to be rough.
Yeah.
That's especially with all the deadfall and everything like that. And then I think it was the next day we went down in there, and we were going after the one bull that was kind of running that 320 off. We never saw him. And then across the ridge line, I saw a bull that I was like, okay, I'll shoot him. And we decided to drop down, and it was 1,000 feet straight down and 1,200 feet up the other side. And where we would come out was about 5 miles from camp. And, but he was bedded down. And so I was like, okay, well, hopefully he stays there. And we dropped down, and on the way up, I remember seeing the girl that went with me, her name's Laura. She's kind of big on like antler hunting and shed hunting and stuff like that. And she was actually talking about how this is the kind of place that you'd find a deadhead in. And we looked, I saw like a jawbone. I reached down and I grabbed it. It was in a weird spot. It was underneath this tree. And I like looked back at her and I handed it to her, and she like grabbed it and threw it to the ground really fast. Her face, like her eyes like lit up, and right on the other side of the tree was a big 7x7 bull elk deadhead.
Wow.
And we taped him out at a little over 3:30, and his ivories were worn all the way like past the bone basically. So he was probably, he was in the 12 or 13 year range. Wow. When he finally kicked the bucket. But it was really cool to, I've never found a deadhead. And we were way down in there. I looked at her, I was like, I'm not taking him out. Like, you can if you want to, but this is way, I'm not going to do this. Like, if it was my bull, I would take him out, but not for a deadhead. And she did not even hesitate. Like, off came her pack, she was ready to go. And it's good for her.
Good for her. Yeah.
I knew that we had to pack up and try and get up on that bull that was bedded down, but we were so far down underneath him that I was like, all right, well, if you want to do it, then we'll kind of figure it out. She was a trooper. She packed that thing all the way out to the top. It weighed 35 pounds or whatever, but we couldn't even get on that bull. But when we got to the top, that night we started to come across a whole bunch of tracks that weren't there when we went in. And so I started to get kind of a better feel for what the elk were doing, which I guess comes around towards the end of this, but it was a long trek all the way back to camp. We were exhausted, out of water for quite a while, and trying to find water and everything for camp was a pain. We still had like 5 miles to go to get back to camp, and it was kind of discouraging because I was having such a hard time like locating bulls. But I mean, she was in high heaven because of that deadhead. So that's all that mattered for her. And then that night, if I remember right, like kind of the world started to shift. We were at like the 14th or something, and 2 hours before daylight, you could hear bulls starting to bugle, and they were bugling everywhere. Like, cause when one of the unique things or one of the cool things about packing that far back in there is you're kind of on top of them. And like, there were a couple nights where I woke up cause a bull was bugling less than 100 yards from my tent. And they're all over the place. It's not kind of like sitting on a base camp next to a road. You're on top of these guys in their territory. So yeah, I remember that. And we got up that morning and we didn't go after the bull that was right above us. We kind of backtracked around and went to this other little area, and we stayed up on the shelf glassing for most of the day. And we saw a whole bunch of bulls coming through, and we saw bulls like chasing each other around. We saw bulls with cows, but nothing really big. There was a decent six, and I could not find the bulls that I was after. And then finally that night we went across this like meadow towards the one where that 320 was at the next, or from a couple days earlier. And as we were climbing out, a bull bugled above me, and this was, I don't know, he probably was like 200 yards away. So I bugled and kept trying to cut the distance on him. And I think he was doing the same to me. And then another one bugled actually down underneath us. And so we're sitting there, and this bull on top is actually coming pretty quick. And so we kind of post up, and we set up in front of these trees towards him. And I was thinking he was going to come down around this like little rim, and I could hear him bugling, and he's coming in a hurry. And this one off to our right underneath us, he's a ways down. And then I bugled, and they went quiet for, it wasn't even a minute and a half. And then all of a sudden I hear these footsteps, and I turn and I kind of looked underneath the tree, and I could see something moving, and I knelt down, and this bull's like 10 feet from me staring at me in the face. And it like, I like startled and jumped kind of. And she was like, had no idea what to do. Cause I mean, he was right on top of us. We had no idea. He like came in so fast. And he actually jumped out into this clearing, and I drew back, and I think I caught her off guard. And you should probably never do this to somebody, but I did it anyways. I drew back. I could tell he was decent, and I looked back at her and I was like, what is he and how far? And he was like 15 yards.
Yeah.
And I mean, it was in the dark, but I put her on the spot. Like if she said shoot, I would have dubbed him. But I think she just like was so awestruck at that point that she didn't know what to do, and she like tried to grasp at a rangefinder real fast and find it. And she's like, I'm like, is his fives as big as his fours? Like, because if he had big fives, I would have shot. and it was getting dark. And I mean, I didn't have enough time to pull my rangefinder out. I could just tell he was a six. And then he stopped, and then he ran around this like little tree, and then he stopped again broadside at like 40 yards. And the whole time I'm like held back at draw, and she was fumbling over it, and she didn't feel comfortable making the call at that point, which I don't blame her. Like, I don't blame anybody for saying yes or no at that point. And had she said yes, I would have shot. Had she said no, then we just let him go. And I was cow calling the whole time. So he had no idea what I was. He didn't wind us or anything. I just saw him through the tree at 10 feet and he freaked out. And he left and he actually came back and I got a better look at him, and he was probably almost a 300 bull. He was a good bull, but
how'd you call him? Did you call him back or did he just come back?
I cow called him back in. Oh, okay. He was, yeah. So I was bugling at him when he came in, and then as soon as he jumped, I started cow calling, 'cause I always have a reed in my mouth, like at all times. Mm-hmm. And that stopped him. It stopped him at 15 yards and it stopped him again at 40. And then he like went around the tree and he like disappeared for, I don't know, a minute. And then he turned around and came right back. And because it was pretty dark, or it wasn't, it was getting to the point where shooting light was getting close. And he just was so confused as to what was going on. And then he took off running. He barked. And when he barked, bull on top of me, he kind of took off and it was like, well, okay. And I looked back at her and I was like, it's fine. Like, I'll let you call the shot, but I don't think you should probably never put anybody on the spot like that. I thought it was comical, but either way.
It sounds like the whole situation was just kind of fat. How long did that whole scenario take?
3 minutes max. Like,
yeah,
It happened so fast because I didn't expect him to come in. He was way down on the other side, or he was down off the ridge line, a couple hundred yards away. And then within a minute, he was 10 feet. And like, I've called a lot of bulls in, but I've never called anything in under 40 yards,
yeah,
which is kind of crazy. But I solo hunt. So usually you have a caller and you have a shooter. And usually that bulls get hung up at like 40 yards, and this guy, he came into 10 feet, and that's kind of a trip.
Yeah, that's crazy.
he's right on top of you at that point. And that was a fun experience. And then the next day we kind of struggled. The bulls had kind of moved around. We got into some calling matches with some stuff, but never could get a shot. And then that was it for her. She was gone. So I was like, okay, now it's kind of go time. I need to figure something out. I need to put something down. And I had just kind of found out about Idaho at that time. So I knew I had enough food for probably a week. And that's when the bulls started going. That's when the bulls started really kicking into rut. You're talking about the 6th, 17th or so. Mm-hmm. I had gone back out and I had picked up food. And I started to see bigger bulls come in, and I started to chase on some bigger bulls. I think the 17th or maybe the 18th, I went in, I had a bull bugling and he sounded big. I knew he had some cows. And so I kind of snuck around. I got inside of his cows and I didn't challenge him. A lot of people will talk to you about getting in there and challenging a big bull. A herd bull. And with them, I just got in there. I started chuckling at his cows and he came in hot. He was pissed because he didn't know where I was at. He didn't know anything. And he came in, he was like 40, 50 yards. At that point, and he came around a tree and I drew back because I could tell he was a six coming around the corner. And then he came around, he cleared that tree, and he was busted off right behind his third on the one side. So he was a 6x3 technically. And I was like, dang it. Cause he was solid, pretty heavy. And you know, it's not an ego thing. I'm very provider driven, where I haven't bought beef in years. So the concept is I have to shoot one, but I mean, I only get this tag once every 3 or 4 years. So I'm going to kind of, I was going for something with size and, and I knew that there was big bulls in there. And so I let him go. I didn't shoot. And then shortly after, I actually turned around, he was right next to camp. And so I went back and I grabbed the cameras. He didn't know I was there. And I was actually headed back in to like try and film him and call him back in. And I run into five people and way out in the middle of this place. And they're like, this one kid's like chomping at the bit. And this other guy goes like, yeah, like go after him. And I was like, do you know what he is? Like, I'll film it if you want and I'll try and help you. And they're like, he's like, no, he's like, I don't care. I just want to go shoot it. I was like, so I kind of gave him a roadmap how to get in there and come to find out it's his first time elk hunting. And I looked over at his buddies. I was like, oh, he's going to mess it up. He has no chance. He did. Yeah. He blew the whole herd out. Poor kid. Like, yeah. I think he got within like 60 yards and I think he was just too impatient and got so excited. And he blew the herd out of the whole mountain. Which was funny. We kind of laughed and watched from a distance, but it was good. And then I want to say the next day after that, I had another situation where So I dropped down. I got to the point where I was like, I know I'm going to have to drop into the timber. So I'm going to go after these bulls that they're bugling every single day. And I dropped, it was like 1100 feet. And it's like straight down. And I knew there was this shelf in there and I was trying to follow them around and I came out on the shelf and it didn't matter what way I was walking. The wind was always like behind me blowing the wrong direction. I swear. Just one of those situations that just wasn't going to work out.
Yeah.
Like
not meant to be in that situation.
It wasn't. And I knew they were there because I had heard them in the morning kind of moving over. And I got onto this little flat and right as I got onto the flat, I saw him stand up and oh my God, like he would be like the bull I shot last year was a big bull. He scored a 330. That was a really crazy cool experience. It was the biggest bull I've ever had the opportunity to take a shot at. And this guy blew him out of the water. And I was devastated because it's like, I just got there and I was trying to move really slow, but I was still kind of impatient and I wasn't willing to like sit on it. And I kicked them all out and he probably had 20 cows and blew them all out of the whole side of the mountain. I blew them out of their bed too, which is like the absolute no-no. And I was kind of discouraged at myself because if you kick them out when they're kind of moving in the morning, they generally won't run very far. But if they're like bedded down in the afternoon and you kick them out, like they're gone forever. You're never going to see them again. And that's exactly what I did. So I'm 1100 feet straight down and I watched them run up the other side and kind of through the timber. And you have to just like, at that point I was like 12 or 13 days or something like that in. And you just sit on the side of the mountain and you got your head in your hands and you're just like, come on, like what do I have to do? And yeah. They're just bigger and they're faster. And like in the same time that you can drop like 100 feet, they can run up and over two mountains. And you're just, I was just really frustrated at that point. And I think, yeah, so we did that, or I did that. And then the next day it was the typical September. It went from 70 degrees to, I hunted in the morning and I got back and it started to rain a little bit. And then rain all of a sudden turned into 3 inches of snow.
Oh man.
And I was just, yeah, I was just like, I don't know. It was just kind of a mess. And, but that night, now in the past, I've always been the person that if it starts raining and snowing like that, like I just go into my tent and I'm done for the day, but I've got horses. So I had to hang out with them and let them graze and everything for hours. And I got to the point where I was like, I'm just going to go out and I'm going to keep hunting. And so after about 4 hours of letting them graze, I tied them back up and I took off and there was a lot of snow on the ground. And I went and all of a sudden I got to this point and bulls were bugling everywhere right after the snow stopped. And the whole countryside lit up and I was like super pumped and excited. And I'm chasing this bull down the side of this like hill basically. And it's one of those things where, I don't know if you've experienced it, but it's like they're out in front of you and you're like, you think you're moving fast. And it's just like every time they bugle, it seems like they're like 10 more steps farther ahead.
They move a little faster than we do, don't they?
They do. And, but he sounded so big. It was like one of those things that gets your heart pumping. You're just like, man, I got to go see. And I knew I was getting myself into danger because it was getting dark. And I just kept dropping and dropping and dropping and dropping. And next thing I know, like I'm in the bottom, I'm in this creek bed. I have no idea how far I am. And then I hear this, like, I hear a crack like in the trees just right in front of me. And I see a body kind of move through the tree line or through the trees. And I drew back because he was like 35 yards and the timber was pretty thick right there at the bottom. And out pops a stupid 5-point. And I was just like, I was like, there's no way that bull that I've been chasing the whole time is a 5-point. There's just no way. And it wasn't. There was a couple different bulls, but I thought I was right on the big one. And as soon that 5-point, he like picked me after I could have shot him at that point, but he kind of bolted. And then it wasn't 2-3 minutes later, I cow called. And then I heard him. I heard that big bull scream off and I sat down and I looked and he was pushing his cows up the other side, up this like rock face. And I've never seen a bull that big in my life ever. Nice. And there's a guy going in there with a rifle tag right now that I pinned him down and everything, but he was probably like, I'm guessing 390. Like I've never seen anything like it. Huh. And, he was impressive. My phone was dead, so I didn't get to even take any pictures, which kind of sucks. But he was about 200 yards away, and there was no way I was going to get to him. It was dark. And so I watched him kind of run his cows up and over, and I just kind of sat there in awe. And it was getting cold and dark, but it was worth the watch because, I mean, it's not very often that you get to experience an animal like that, especially on public land. Mm-hmm. I was brokenhearted, but I was at least like appreciative of where I was at and what was going on and him in general, because my goodness, he was impressive and body was bigger than anything I've ever seen. And then that night out was kind of a mess because I had to go. I mean, it was, if anybody's ever like dealt with like the fog and everything, when you're walking out in the cold after the snow, like you can't turn a headlamp on because the fog is like, all of a sudden becomes like 2 feet in front of your face. I don't know if you've experienced it or not.
Yeah.
And so I had to walk out probably 5 miles, not knowing where I was at, not having a cell phone, not having a GPS, in the dark. And I got back at like, I don't know, maybe 1 o'clock in the morning. And I was just spent in the snow and everything. And I was running out of food and I was just exhausted. I was to the point then where my whole concept of going in to shoot something big was like, it had turned into something that I just needed to put something down because I knew I was getting close to being out of food and that whole discouraging nightmare of a walk out in the dark. It took me like 4 hours. Yeah. I was over it. But it was good at that point. But I was starting to worry that I was going to leave here. And, you know, social media is sometimes it's cool to be able to tell your story and everything, but I can't even imagine what people would say if I walked out of there without anything. Like, that sounds terrible to say, but if I walked out of Wyoming without a bull, I was wondering at one point what people were going to say to me.
Yeah, it's different for sure.
It's there's some pressure there, especially owning a company. So mm-hmm. I started to think about it and I was like, okay, I can do this. And I knew that every morning there was a strange sounding bull that would sound off above the shelf or above the shelf above my camp, like almost every morning at like 4:30 in the morning. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to wait for him to sound off. I'm going to go chase him tomorrow. And he called that next morning about 9, and I followed him for like about a mile and a half. And again, it was one of those situations where I thought I was getting closer. And then next thing I know, he's like a mile ahead of me. And I gave up that day because I was tired. And I got to a point where I told a friend of mine through when I was texting on the Garmin, I was like, I've only got enough food that to last like 2 days, or I can eat in the morning and I can have a snack in the afternoon and I can stretch this to 4. And I don't hunt in the evening. And that was a decision that I had to make, which was kind of a unique one. And so that's what I decided to do. And the next morning I went to push after the exact same bull, and I pressed him, and come to find out he was going a lot farther than I thought he was. And I made it about 2.5 miles, and I heard a bull bugle on the side of me, and I kind of cut down underneath him, and I cow called, and at like 45 yards, this 5-point pushes a whole herd of cows right out in front of me. And I decided not to shoot because he's a 5, and I don't know why I didn't shoot, to be honest with you. It was because I was telling myself, I'm just going to shoot anything with a branch mm-hmm. antler bull, and that was it. So he pushed his cows around the corner. And that bull that I was chasing that had like a weird bugle, it was almost like a scream. It was a loud, like high pitched, long, like whine. And he was still out in front of me. So I kept pushing and I kept pushing. And next thing I know, like I'm over 4 miles from where I heard him first bugle that morning.
Wow.
Come to find out they were doing it every single day. I got back in there and there was like 15 bulls running around, and they were coming up to this flat at night. And then in the morning when the sun would come up, they would all push back to the same bedding area, which was like 4.5 miles away, which is incredible to think what they're doing at that point. Like in a night's time span, they're traveling 8-9 miles. I have no idea why, but anyways, so I actually cut close to him and he bugles and I'm like, man, I'm close. And I dropped my pack and I walked around this tree and he bugled again. I could see he was moving. And, I saw him out in front of me and he stepped into this clearing and he's every bit of 360. Just a monster bull. And I was like, I can't believe it. Like he's right there. He's at like 52 yards. He's moving and he's angled right at me. And if anybody watched my full draw film last year, like I have no problem taking a frontal shot.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that's what it was. But, and I drew back and I ranged him. He was at 47 but he was like right on the edge of this little pine tree. And I was afraid I was going to hit a branch. And so after holding draw for probably 20 seconds, I let down because he had turned his head. And then he kind of steps out to the side of this pine tree and he turns completely broadside for me. And it's just like a clear shooting lane. It's like the gates just like opened wide open. And I was so excited. And I drew back and I shot. And when the arrow came out, like, it's like celebration touchdown dance. Like I'm ready. I couldn't, it was perfect. And then right before the arrow got there, I heard a snap and my arrow hit a branch somewhere.
Oh my gosh.
And I don't know what happened because my GoPro wasn't working, but I thought I hit him. I thought I was going to find him around the corner because I couldn't find the arrow but I couldn't find any blood. And I tracked him and I tracked him and I tracked him and I tracked him. And then probably about an hour and a half later, I heard him bugle. And I was just like, no way. And then he just started bugling all the rest of the day. And at that point, I'm like, I'm going to leave here empty-handed. And I was like about as down as you could possibly get. I had fought in there for what, 16 days at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And I had just missed the biggest bull I've ever had the opportunity to like see it. Well, not see, but even get remotely close to take a shot. And he was gorgeous. And I was just, at first I was like devastated because I thought I was going to lose him. I thought I had hit him. And it was the wounded bull situation that you dread, you don't ever want to experience. But then when I heard him bugle, it was kind of a relief, but it was like gut wrenching at the same time because mm-hmm. I knew he wasn't dead. I knew I had missed and I didn't know what to do. I was out of food and I was pretty devastated. And it was a 5 mile walk back to camp. I wasn't happy about that. I didn't have any food. And I gutted it out and had to think about everything the whole time. And it was kind of a mess. And I don't know. The next morning I told myself, I'm like, I'm going to take the horses in there. I'm going to cut him off. And so I saddled up the boys and we took off before daylight. And, I don't know if it was the moon was getting brighter or what, but he was out in front of me right before light. He bugled probably within 100 yards of me and the horses like did not like it, but I was excited because I was on him again. And man, I chased that stupid bull around all day. Couldn't get another shot. And I was just kind of like, at that point, I only have like a day left of food. And I take the horses back and I'm like discouraged. And this is at like 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And, I didn't know what to do. And it was just kind of like brokenhearted at that point. And then I heard like sitting in camp, I heard this bull bugle and then he bugles again and bugles again. It's another one. And I'm tired. My body's tired. It's like worn out. And I walk up over this hill. I'm like, what is going on? And cause I only had to walk like 50 yards from camp to see what was happening. And then all of a sudden, like right underneath me, like a herd of like 20 cows bust out of the tree line. And it's got a huge herd bull and like 6 satellite bulls like running right underneath me. And I watched them push up this like canyon, this ravine. And I'm just like, I better go. Like it was a completely different direction than I hunted yet. And I was like, well, I better try and figure something out. So I went and I ate and I had to go like round the horses up cause I was letting them graze and they were off like in different directions. And yeah, they're like kids. They're like teenagers. They don't listen to you. You gotta go round them up.
Yeah.
and the one horse, he would throw a fit and I don't know. So I finally got him rounded up. I put my boots on and I ate. I was like, I'm going to eat basically the rest of my food. And this is going to be it. Like I can go hunt in the morning, but that's it. And just to give myself energy to try and go after this herd. And I went out and I probably got I was a little more than 2 miles down on this ridge line and I heard a bugle and I was like, okay. And I got closer and I got on top of the ridge and they were bugling right underneath me. They couldn't have been more than 100 yards. But with the wind, I actually had to go out in front of them. So I had to rush past them and come back around. And then as I'm walking through the timber, the herd bull busts off and I can see him and he's at like 50 yards in front of me, but I can just see his head. And then he turns around and he goes backwards. And so I dropped my pack and everything and I crawled like hands and feet, knees, whatever, crawling all the way underneath this big down like log. And on the other side of this like down timber patch is his cows. And I'm sitting there watching him he's running through the timber back and forth, like pushing these other bulls away and all hell's breaking loose. And I don't have any of my cameras with me because I was tired and I told myself I wasn't going to add the extra weight. And of course this is like the most fun night of the entire trip.
Yeah. All right.
And his cows are like feeding to me. And the next thing I know, I hear this like the ground stomping and I look up and there's a 4-point. Like he's pushing this 4-point right past me at like this 4-point's like 15 yards, runs right by me. And I was like, oh, that's crazy. And I look up, I see the herd bull, and he's coming down the top of the hill, and he stops in between these two trees. And like, I had a shot, but it was one of those shots, like, you know, you see those shots from like an archery shoot where there's like a target in between two trees and there's like 75 arrows stuck in the trees. Uh-huh. That's the shot he gave me. And I wasn't going to take it. And he's at like 46 yards or something like that. And then he turned, cause I would have been one of the people with an arrow stuck in a tree.
Sure.
And so he turns around and he pushes everything around. I'm laying there underneath these logs. And every time the wind switches, it's like swirling every once in a while. Like I like lay face first in the ground. I like start praying. I'm like, please, 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 please do not bust these calves, because these cows are getting closer. And at one point I look up and I got a cow to my left at 15 yards and she's feeding. And I got these other, and I would like poke my head up over the tree every once in a while. I'd range all the cows. There's like six of them right there. Like the farthest one was 30 yards away. And I laid there for 45 minutes trying to get a shot at this herd bull. And out of the corner of my eye, this bull comes running in from behind me. And he stops right in front of this cow almost. And the cow was like 35 yards. And I could tell he had size to him. He was a 6 point. And I said, you know what? That like, your mind works so fast at that point. Like I thought, you know, at first I thought it was him. I thought it was the herd bull. And then I thought, you know what, if it's not the herd bull is going to come rushing in. And if he busts one of these cows and they run over the top of me, everything's gone. And then I thought, oh, well, but then there's a chance that he gives me a shot, but then there's a chance that he doesn't give me a shot and I get picked. And I don't know, everything was running through my head at like 0.0 seconds. And I stood up and I took a shot on the bull that was standing right there. And I thought he was closer to like 35 yards. He was closer to like, I think he was 18 yards.
Oh man. And
I shot high because I used the wrong pin and I blew into the back of his front shoulder and hit the top of his lungs and he dropped on impact.
Huh.
And he just fell right there. Didn't move an inch. And right when I shot, I knew he wasn't the herd bull. And like, there was a bit of disappointment because after I shot, I turned and I looked and that herd bull was like on a dead sprint to kick that bull out of there.
Uh-huh.
And you're just like, and he's like under 50 yards at that point. And I'm just like, oh, it's where your morals come into play. You're having like to fight yourself at this point. You're like, man, I'm so far back here. You're tempted, but I only had one arrow left, so it was going to be tough.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Right.
No, I wasn't going to do that. I'm just making jokes, but no, that herd bull, he came right in. I got a good look at him. He was probably 340. Yeah, it was pretty rough, but you know what? At that point, you never would have known. And I don't have that great of luck. So there's no sense in risking it. I don't have any food. And you know what, to see that bull drop on impact like that was crazy.
Well, that bull that you shot is a little guy for sure.
No, he's like 280. He's a great six. Like, yeah. And actually come to find out the night that Laura left, like 12 days earlier, 10 days earlier, I actually came across the 6 point that I tried to shoot. It was the one that I killed.
Really?
Yep. I have video and I have photos of him. And I looked at him over and over and over. And I was actually, I had him at about 80 yards when it got too dark to take a shot.
Uh-huh.
And it was the same bull that I ended up shooting.
How cool is that? That's neat.
Yeah. So I was kind of excited about it because I was bummed the night that I didn't get a shot. I mean, so I had to kind of take that all into perspective.
Mm-hmm.
But then of course it's dark and I got no food and I'm tired. And so now all the fun begins.
Yeah, but right.
I remember a friend of mine, I texted him on the Garmin and said that I had shot one. And then they asked me like 2 hours later how I was doing, like how it was going. I was like, I haven't started yet. And they were like, what? Like, how? I'm like, I'm eating. I cut a big chunk of backstrap out. and I had started a fire. And I mean, that was the food that was going to get me through the night.
Sure.
I was literally out of food. Like when I say I was out, like there was nothing left. And he was my food. So I was grateful for that situation because I had pushed the limits and I was tired. And I mean, I was probably burning 4,000 or 5,000 calories a day and I was eating 1,000. So
yeah,
it was kind of fun. And actually it was the easiest pack out I've ever had. Like I'm all about the pack out and about how painful it is, but I got the horses within like 100 feet.
Oh man, that makes it nice.
And it was downhill to the horses. I didn't even have to go uphill. So
yeah, perfect. Perfect.
Oh, it was great. And so yeah, I got the horses down there. I threw the whole bull on one of the horses and we just rode out. And the ride out got interesting the next night when we ran into some pack goats in the dark. But that's a whole nother story.
Yeah, I bet those horses didn't like that too much.
I almost lost everything. Like my horses bolted. They look like little devil children running up in the dark.
So before we wrap it up, would you ever hunt with horses again?
Oh, I'll do it in a heartbeat. Like
really?
Okay. Oh, absolutely.
Because like, it sounds like it was terrible.
You know, I will tell you, and when I write the articles, it'll make more sense if you read it. But
yeah,
there is something about like, because there was a couple nights where when I came out, like at dark or in the dark, I had to get on the horses. I had to ride back a couple hours or a couple miles, 2, 3, 4 miles back to camp. And like, that's about as peaceful as it gets. Cause usually when you're walking and stuff like that, like you're like grinding it out. You're tired and you're exhausted and everything. But I mean, the sun's setting, you're in the middle of Wyoming and there's not a sound in the world except for the horses like hooves as we ride off to camp. Like, that's a different experience.
Yeah, that sounds pretty nice. I'd like to try it with, I'd like to try hunting with animals sometime. That I've got a friend here in New Mexico that has burros. Okay. And I want to try to, that's what he uses them for, is for their pack animals. And I think it'd be fun to try to hunt with them sometime.
There's a lot of people that want to try like either goats or they tell you llamas or something like that. And from a pack standpoint, yeah, but I'm a solo hunter, so I would rather take two horses in and yeah, you kind of have to like, I mean, they're your children at that point. You have to feed them. You have to make sure that they have that you go back to camp in the middle of the day and you let them graze for like 2, 3, 4 hours. Sometimes they run away from you. Like,
yeah,
it's something that you have to kind of take on. You have to take into consideration, but at the same time, like, they're fun. Like there were some days where I'm like, you know what? I'm tired. I don't really want to, like that day where you might go take a nap. Nah, I'd throw the saddles on and we'd go ride. And yeah, we'd go like 4, 5, 6 miles back so I could see some different country and I don't have to bust my butt to get back there.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
They do offer a lot more opportunities in the fact that like, if you got to the trailhead where my truck was, there was probably 5 or 6 horse trailers, but all those guys, they were only hunting like 2, 3 miles back max. And I mean, I was 8 to 15 miles back there. And like there was just nobody, and they just give you a whole new dimension of where you're allowed to go. And I mean, I've hunted 10 miles back on foot, but like you think about the pack out and you're so dreading it and everything else. And these guys take some of those aspects of the hunt out of it, and they give you the energy to be able to push harder during your hunt, knowing that you're going to be able to like, not necessarily relax, but you do have some help. Even if you're by yourself, you technically have help at that point.
Right. Did you run into those hunters anymore? The other hunters that were out
there? No. So they were only there for, they said they were there for 2, 3 days and,
okay.
And, but they had all hiked in. So that was the other difference, was I actually ran into another group of 3 guys that came back in there, and they were only in, they could only pack in enough food and water for like 3 days. They didn't know there was a stream coming out of the side of the mountain next to my camp, but, I wasn't going to tell them.
Yeah.
The,
yeah, right.
The, But that was the difference, is these guys could only come back in there for 2-3 days at a time. And then if they didn't see enough, then they were going to go back to the truck. They were going to hunt close, where I could load up 2 weeks worth of food or more on the back of one of those horses, and I could stay back there. I could have lived back there if I wanted to. Yeah. And they give you this unique opportunity, and you get to experience the hunt from a whole new world, and a new, condition. And yeah, there are some things that make life a pain in the ass with them, but they, I don't know. I love horses. I want to buy the black one. The red one, he can stay. But I have a little bit of land that I'd be able to like house one in, but draft horses are different too, because they require a lot more food. Mm-hmm. You got to let them graze for a little bit longer. So I would actually have to wake up and start letting them graze at 4:30 in the morning, and the sun didn't come up till 7. So they would need 2 hours of eating or more before I could even leave camp. But I don't have to go very far to get into the elk. I can literally go 100 yards up the side of the hill and get onto the shelf, and I can glass, and there'll be elk right there.
Yeah.
So it's, yeah. I don't, yeah, have to walk.
But it does make a difference. Sure. Yeah.
It has its perks, and it does have its, it has its bad things, like pack goats and trying to deal with the tying everything down to the saddle. And I had the situation where the antlers fell off the one time and the horse went nuts. And I mean, I could go to the good and bad all day, but
yeah,
it was a great trip. Like, it was probably something that I'll cherish forever. And actually I found a way to draw that tag again next year. So
nice.
You'll see me back. You'll see me right back in there. The, usually it takes 3 years to draw. So I'm going to get lucky with this one.
Yeah. Well, I hope so, man. Best of luck to you.
Awesome.
Well, I appreciate you coming on and telling the story. It sounds like just an amazing adventure, dude, back there by yourself for the majority of it. It just sounds awesome, man. So
I think to draw on that many animals and to have that many animals in close is something different. That was one of the takeaways from it, was just being able to, over that amount of time, to be able to actually draw back and decide whether or not you're going to take one out. I mean, normally you get back there, you draw back one time, you get one chance. And I was even lucky after the miss. Like, God, that was gut-wrenching. But
yeah,
to be able to take one home, I'm appreciative of everything that I experienced back there. It was a great learning experience for sure.
Yeah, very cool. Very cool. All right, man. Well, I'll let you go. How do people find you? What's your Instagram and all that stuff if they want to see that bull?
They can find it actually on either the company page, which is Built for the Hunt with the number 4, or you can find it on my personal page, which is Relentless Hunter with the HNTR. So there's no U and E at the end of on Hunter. So the bull's on there. Bull from last year's on there. The I did get a lot of it on film, but turns out like my GoPro wasn't working. So a couple of the shots weren't on there. Actually the miss wasn't on there and everything. So I'll do like a little short, but because I did have cameras back in there and I did film a whole bunch of stuff. So we'll try and put some of that stuff out on YouTube, and the company itself will, I'll probably release the one article on the company website. We'll talk about preparing for a hunt like that and how you physically prepare for it, as well as like the nutritional base to prepare for it.
Yeah.
Which would be some good content for people to read.
Yeah, definitely.
And how to pack into it. So.
Very cool. Yeah. And then your full draw film tour, is that on your YouTube page too?
It's not yet. I was going to add like a little brief to it, like a little, what do I call it? An intro to it, kind of the backstory, because the backstory beyond it was, it kind of deals with some of my own personal life stuff and some of the times that I went through and that I never really thought that I would make it back to the mountains. So, that was kind of the thing about the full draw film tour, and I do have it. I have to publish it. Things have been kind of crazy since I was disappeared from the world for 3 weeks. So.
Yeah. Right. You dropped out of there for about a month. So, well, cool, man. Great. I'll put all your social media and your website link and everything in the show description. But awesome. Again, dude, thanks for coming on and sharing the story.
Yeah. I appreciate you letting me tell it. I know it was a little bit longer, but.
We had 3 weeks. We had a lot of time to cover there, but
yeah,
right on, man. Well, I'll let you go.
All right. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah. So, hey, let me